Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we have the most splendiferous, deep-delving, investigative ally on our show, our fun drive show. So this will be part one, really, honoring Merlin Sheldrake and his fantastic book, Entangled Life, How Fungi Make Our World, Change Our Minds, and Shape Our Futures. His website is MerlinSheldrake.com. But first, before we do more, in the spirit of experimental symbiosis, KPFA is in Fun Drive, and I like this experiment rather than the usual enticements, you know, here's a book, here's a CD, here's the thing. We are afforded the opportunity that 10% of our donations be given to a community nonprofit doing enormous great good. I have chosen UndocuFund in three areas. There's UndocuFund San Francisco and UndocuFund Sonoma County, UndocuFund Oakland, and these provide relief for undocumented workers at this time of great stress. So they say many of our undocumented community members work in temporary or low-wage jobs without access to sick leave, unemployment, or the ability to work remotely. Immigrants, many of them undocumented, do essential work that sustains us all. And it remains unclear whether national relief plans will include immigrants in their plans for support. We cannot wait to take action. Your support for UndocuFund will provide relief and support to undocumented families and individuals. So I think this is a great thing to do. So we are in Fun Drive. We're about to set forth on our deep-delving, jaunty romp of a show. But do remember that you can donate online a number, a magical number significant to you. I like fives and eights myself, but anything significant to you, 5, 50, 500, 5,000, the sky's the limit, and the underworld also is the limit. You know, you can do that by going to kpfa.org or calling 1-800-HEY-KPFA. That's 1-800-439-5732. And you can choose, you know, UndocuFund San Francisco, UndocuFund Sonoma County, or UndocuFund Oakland for where 10% of your generous donation will go. All righty, team. So we're welcoming a longtime ally of mine, one of my favorite humans on the planet, Merlin Sheldrake, upon the release of his book, Entangled Life, How Fungi Make Our Worlds, Change Our Minds, Shape Our Futures. He is a biologist, a writer with a background in plant sciences, microbiology, ecology, and the history and philosophy of science. He is, like, I interject in the usual promo, he is like Chiron, the 2,500-year-old years ago mentor centaur who lived in a cave and was the most knowledgeable of beings. So he represented the perfect relationship of wild nature and human culture. So Merlin received a PhD in tropical ecology from Cambridge University for his work on underground fungal networks in tropical forests in Panama. I remember where he was doing a pre-doctoral research, where he was a pre-doctoral research fellow of the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute. His research ranges from fungal biology to the history of Amazonian ethnobotany to the relationship between sound and form in resonant systems. A keen brewer and fermenter, he is fascinated by the relationships that arise between humans and more than human organisms. A musician, performs on the piano and the accordion. Entangled Life is his first book. And then further, I just want to let Pluto introduce him as we further let Pluto, bestowing appreciative blessings upon Merlin, introduce him as a collaborative colleague. For the fun of it, today, the sun in Taurus, sensual, incarnational intimacy with nature's guiding intelligence, is at 24 degrees of Taurus. Its image, I have it here, for that particular degree, is a vast public park, large natural processes, ecology, the underlying ground upon which all things are based, That's where the sun is today, at 24 Taurus, and it's exactly trining, on paper, 120-degree angle to Pluto, intelligence of death, rebirth, underworld, regeneration, this giant cauldron of collapse from which we are ladling out. What, we go. And just for the fun of it, exactly squaring Merlin's sun at 24 Libra for the first time in 248 years, and more fun things like that. So welcome, Merlin.
Thank you, Caroline.
It's great. So I should tell our dynamic, enthusiastic listeners, this is part one. We are in Fun Drive, and I will periodically, and when the wolf alarm goes off, announce that further. But this is part one. We will do part two. Did we confirm June 4th?
June the 4th, exactly, yeah.
Oh, splendid. Okay, so this is our promo tease, although quite wonderful. And so in reading your call and response with Robert McFarlane, whom I follow on Twitter, but I was encouraged, you go fungal intimacy, you know, you're drinking large pots of chaga and reishi tea, and I immediately went and brewed some, so I have it right here, and eat mushrooms for at least one meal a day. I love that. So is it okay with you? I mean, as you know, in our accord, and certainly in this radio show, it's completely democratic. I will ask questions maybe, and you go anywhere you want. But I was fascinated by, you know, where you went with McFarlane, because, of course, he brought up viruses, right? And you had thought that you might have had COVID, right?
Yeah, well, I thought I had. It matched the description, for sure. But I got off lightly compared to many, which I feel grateful for.
Right. So the chaga tea was not a complete protector.
Well, I mean, I think it might have helped me get off lightly, but I'm not totally sure. But it lasted a day. So I bounced back after a day, and I trust my immune system had some role in that. And I trust the chaga had some role in supporting my immune system's role in that. So who knows?
Right. And then, you know, maybe as our departure, you know, what you said, anywhere you want to go with what you said to Robert McFarlane, he did ask you, and he'd asked you about viruses and fungi. And do you want to do, I mean, it's a vast, huge thing, but do you want to just say a little bit about an honoring of viruses?
Of course, yes. I mean, the thing about the viral world that I've been most fascinated by, and I've been thinking about a lot recently, is their role as catalysts of evolution. And viruses are these entities that many don't even consider to be living organisms, although they blur this line between living and not living, but they certainly replicate, and they certainly do things in the living world. And so they move between organisms, and they carry genetic material between organisms, and they catalyze so many evolutionary shifts by inducing evolutionary novelty, by introducing new traits into old lineages. And actually, mammals owe their mammalian nature to viruses, because it's only because somewhere deep in our ancestral line, at the root of our lineage of mammals, that we could only become placental mammals because we acquired some genes from viruses that the viruses needed to overcome their host's immune system. So they had these genes that allowed them to overcome the immune system of their host. And we acquired these genes that allow us to overcome the immune systems of our mothers, to develop inside our mothers without being rejected as a non-self, as an other. So we borrowed a viral trait, and that's what made us mammals, and that's what gave us our deepest intimacies, our relationships with our mothers, our need for parental care, our social contact, our social bonding. All of this has its roots in a viral infection, and I find that just so fascinating a thought to roll around.
It is. I mean, and crisis does encourage humans to research. I mean, you've been researching forever, not necessarily under crisis, but you also said to McFarlane, I hope that the current period of cultural evolution catalyzed by a virus can draw us towards a state of greater care, bondedness, and consideration, both towards other humans and towards the more than humans with whom we share our planet. And then you say, in accord with Robert McFarlane's realistic gloom, of course it could do quite the opposite, right? Because he responded by saying, I'm skeptical of the early wave of what might be called pandemic utopianism, right? And we go, oh, okay. So, always you're so dedicated that our questions, our quest, you know, guide us into greater humility about the intelligence of so much around us, which is where we want to go. Yes, the viral dynamic. But the virus is also, because I've asked, you know, grown-ups whom we both know, going, well, is it alive? You know, and they go, no, viruses aren't alive. And I go, well, they travel. They seem to have a strategy. What is it? Again, they're right between. They're not quite alive, but they're on. What is your understanding of them or your conversations with them?
Well, like most of life, it's a grey area and there's no straight, smooth, hard cutoffs involved. The viral world is massively diverse and some viruses are huge. Some viruses are the size of bacteria and host smaller viruses which live within them. And some viruses are so tiny that they're not even called viruses. They're called virions. They're not virions, they're called viroids. A kind of proto-virus. So the viral world is hugely diverse, and we lose something when we lump them all together because there are many ways to be a virus. And so some viruses, people say, aren't alive because they depend on another cell to reproduce. A virus has to go inside a bacteria, has to go inside an animal cell, and hijack their reproduction systems in order to make more of itself. And so for that reason, because it's utterly dependent on another cell to complete its life cycle, it's considered to be not a fully fledged living organism. However, there are viruses that can reproduce themselves. And what do you call those? They occupy this middle ground. And so life shades off into non-life gradually, and the viral world makes that very clear. So I think looking for these hard borders doesn't do much for us, actually.
Right. No, we like the permeable and you do, honoring and defending the power of imagination in the scientific world, which was great. There's many ways we want to go there. But I also, just from the very end, the epilogue, which you guided me to was, you know, there you are with your esteemed dad, Rupert. There we go. As a lad, recalling that you would go, and what about this? And what about this? And why? And you said Rupert always had an answer to why, which we love that, and so we do, and a great shout out to your heritage, your parentage, or your brother, your everybody. You know, we're all entangled in this wonderful web. So an homage to Rupert, who always had an answer to your why. Is that really right?
Yes. Well, they've turned into these binges. And I'd say why, and he'd answer, and I'd have another why. You know, when kids are in the why phase, and you know, every answer is met with another why. And I think maybe there are different ways of dealing with this as an adult. One would be to give up on answering the whys and call the end of the game. And the other one is just to keep giving answers until the child exhausts themselves. And that's the approach that he took, perhaps because he found it quite fun to be challenged to produce answers to all these questions which he might not have encountered over the course of that day. He loves questions, he loves answering them. So I think he might have thought of it as something of a sport or as some kind of training, although I'm not sure. But certainly, I learned a lot that way.
Well, it is, you know, it's a call and response, and I like thinking, you know, the quest always begins with questions, and so much of what you proffer, we go, yeah, the questions set forth, and a lot of antidote to the modern world, we go, uncertainty, oops, uh-oh, never mind that. That's the wolves. That's the wolves announcing my responsibility, my temporary responsibility to periodically pitch, which is why this is part one, and we're going to do a full part two on June 4th. But just to chime in, O-Team, we will be back with our fascinating, or just beginning, really, wonderful ally again, Merlin Sheldrake, and he was born with that name, and he lives up to that name. We are in Fund Drive, and I do love the experiment that 10% of your donation, whatever it be, however generous, will go to a nonprofit of your choice. I'm honoring UndocuFund San Francisco, UndocuFund Oakland, UndocuFund Sonoma County, and you can pitch again to keep voices like Merlin's on the air at this crucial time. Information, curiosity, call and response. You can do that by going to kpfa.org or calling 1-800-HEY-KPFA. That's 1-800-439-5732. And now we go back to our regularly scheduled, here we are, in the midst of our diving into adventure. So I also loved, you know, again, the power of imagination, dreams, and metaphor. And at the very end of the book, you say that you are taking a copy of the book and soaking it in water and going to implant it with oyster mushrooms, and then whatever it does, and then you're going to eat them. And then, wait, it goes on, right? Anyway, I found that extremely charming, and I want to do such things. That real magic is literalized. I'm sorry, say that again?
It only felt fair to feed these words about fungi back to the fungi themselves.
Well, yeah, and I found this metaphoric intimacy with life all over, and I just always remember this grumpy at first calligrapher in Aleppo in Syria, and he was grumpy, but then we earned his trust, and he wrote beautiful healing words with vegetable ink on rice paper, and then he put it in our tea so we could drink the words. And I was like, "Oh, that's so wonderful!" And it's sort of what you're implying, you know, the drinking of the you're eating your book literally, which is offering a copy of your book, right? And then the power of imagination. I love colleague Steve Behrman says, sure, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? And you did enroll in an LSD scientific experiential experiment, right?
Yes, it was an amusing experiment, a very brave one, because the scientists wanted to ask whether LSD could improve the problem-solving ability of scientists or mathematicians. And so, you know, they wanted to essentially study the imagination of scientists and mathematicians and whether or not the imagination was turbocharged by this powerful psychedelic. And there were many, I mean, it was brave of them to try, because normally imagination is not discussed that much in scientific practice. Of course, it plays a central role. It couldn't not play a central role. But normally, imagination and speculation, imagination becomes speculation. Speculation is treated with some suspicion. And so it was interesting to be a scientist and have one's imagination placed center of the affair, and not just be placed center of the affair, but have people actually trying to measure your imaginative experience and whether or not you've been able to solve problems. So I found it very amusing to be in this role, a scientist being looked at by scientists, and a scientist looking back at the scientist looking at them. There was this hall of mirrors effect of this, the scientist studying scientists and the scientist looking back.
Right, and you did say that you went in, you wanted to find out more about this wonderful little tiny non photosynthesizing plant that you were studying in the jungles of Panama, right? You asked it to take you on a tour. Is that possibly one?
Well, I just try to imagine these plants, they've lost their ability to photosynthesize, and instead they draw all their nutrition from fungal networks underground. In turn, these fungal networks draw their nutrition from other plants, from green photosynthesizing plants. And so these small, pale white flowers that I was studying, they're powered ultimately from energy acquired from other plants entirely, but drawn through these fungal networks underground. So I wanted to know how it was that these plants were engaging with the fungi. What did they have to offer back to the fungi? Because normally green plants and their symbiotic fungi have some kind of transaction or a kind of deal going on where the plant provides the fungus with energy from photosynthesis and the fungi provide the plant with minerals from the soil. But in the case of these pale white, non-photosynthetic plants, it didn't seem that there was anything that the plant could offer back to the fungus. So I want to just imagine this relationship a little bit more and to try and think if there was anything that there might be that the plant could offer to the fungus that I just hadn't been thinking about. So that's where I set off from. And I had this imaginative journey underground and I really just experienced, you know, this, this frothing, bustling wilderness of the soil. It felt like a kind of Wild West with brigands and bounty hunters and saloon bars and all sorts of, sort of chaos and lots of hard edges and lots of hustle. Of course, this is my imagination, and whether or not this is the case, I have absolutely no idea, but it was certainly a different perspective on the soil from the way that I'd been accustomed to think about it. It was largely in schematic terms. You know, the soil is this kind of abstract arena, and so to be in this bustling wilderness, and just to remember that it is a bustling wilderness, you know, not necessarily with saloon bars, but so it led my mind towards the edge of new questions, and it led my mind out of the grip of some of my prior expectations, and for that I'm very grateful.
Right. Well, you do reference a wonderful thing about how fungi themselves tricked us out of expectations, which is a hugely necessary, useful, good thing right now. Again, liberating, everything can be imprisoning or liberating, but expectations tend to mostly be imprisoning. But didn't you also say that in your imagination, what could the tiny flowers possibly offer to the fungi in a to and fro symbiosis? And you said haven, right?
Haven, yeah, exactly. Shelter, a sanctuary from this hectic madness in the open soil. It's kind of cavernous, a cavernous calm inside these roots. That's what came to me. And who knows? I haven't been able to do experiments on this yet, so it remains a conjecture. But I think it's plausible.
Yeah, no, that's great, and I think it was a great call and response that apparently the LSD scientifically endorsed and controlled experiment. It did take you on the journey you requested, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I felt like I was that my imagination was free, was given permission to range off in a direction which it wouldn't otherwise have done. It might not have been that way for all of the subject of this experiment. That one of the people I was in the same cohort with, who was in a separate room, was a mathematician, and I asked him afterwards how it had gone for him, and he said that it hadn't actually been so productive. He was lying on his bed, and at some point his assistant had asked him, gently reminded him, to think about his work-related problem, and he sat down at the desk and got out a pen and drawn a bracket to begin an equation on this blank piece of paper, and the bracket had wriggled like a snake off the edge of the page. He went straight back to bed and didn't think about math for the rest of his time.
And wasn't it, which one was it? Watson and Crick, you know, their award-winning, their Nobel Prize-winning work on DNA. One of them took LSD. Do you remember which one?
Crick. I haven't found anywhere where that's been totally confirmed, but Crick is said to have taken LSD and found it illuminating.
But what seems to be, either somebody made up a very British response, or else it really was Crick, because he said, no, it's nothing mystical. I take it as a thinking tool. And we go, whatever, sure, fine, absolutely, carry on. And then I guess the realm of dreams, where you will know this too, but it's the chemist who is working on the benzene ring, and then he has a dream of the Ouroboros, the snake biting its own tail, and he wakes up and he goes, I saw the benzene ring. There we go. So, expanding these realms of ways of knowing, which you are so good at, being such a richly cultivated person. But how wonderful now, perfect for your book to come forth. I think it's really great. And again, I want to remind our listeners that this is our teasing. The book came out on Tuesday, right? And may it go out. I'm wildly enthused. I do. I want every library. I want everybody to read this. I want everything. I want it everywhere. Because it is so beautifully written and crucial and deep delving and essential, and part of the dynamic, the kind of Pluto dynamic, is that, you know, these things that are invisible to humans but are so that are the very foundation of the interrelatedness of everything, and we go, oh, there's so much in there in that query. Well, you've gotten fantastic reviews from many of the suspects that we know, and people I don't know too. So are you being well met, well received as the richly cultivated being that you are?
So far, there seems to be a nice gentle fizz.
That's not a nice.
It's a tricky time to put out the book, but maybe it's actually quite a good time to put out the book, because it's a time for thinking and some questions to be asked about our old categories, and questions to be asked about the new categories we want to form, and that's what I hope the book encourages us to do, and it's encouraged me to do in the writing of the book. So maybe it's a good time. I'm not sure.
Oh, no, just for the fun of it, it's a perfect time. the mushrooms themselves, the sky, well, there's just a perfect guiding symmetry, you know, from the realm that I love so much, the we are pattern-tracking beings, and just for the fun of it, there could not be more of an embrace of your dedication and work than is going on right now. And so we like Trickster, we love Trickster, and it's like, against all odds, let's spiral this book out into the world. Absolutely. So you start off, you know, again, did you know, you know, what an important, you know, part of life this is, and there I have scattered notes everywhere here, but just take us again for the fun of it, how old you say 40 million years. Wait a minute. I'm at sea in your notes here. But what is 40 million years? Wait a minute. The largest living structures on dry land. Oh, the large beings for at least 40 million years, 20 times longer than the genus Homo. Homo has existed.
Oh yeah, the prototaxites, these enormous spires. People have found these fossils and puzzled over what they are for over 100 years, and they've been found on all five continents. So whatever they were, these huge things, 8 meters tall, you know, these are substantial structures. And so there's been a slow boiling debate amongst paleobotanists and various types of academics for some time. And it was then proposed relatively recently, after some careful analysis of these structures and of the isotopes inside these structures, that in fact they were enormous fungi. Fungi that were towering over the plants at this time were barely above your knee, and were just beginning to make their life on land. And these enormous fungal structures were would have dominated the landscape could you cast your eye back. It's one of the twists and turns of fungal history, but it's quite a fun one.
Right, and then you're saying, you know, so much of you know, we find it in the Iceman's pocket, you know, again, antibacterial mushroom, And you mentioned also that the inky caps provided ink in which you did many of the drawings in the book, which are fabulous. And friend Carolyn Raffensberger reminded me years ago that the Magna Carta was written with ink made from inky cap mushrooms. So they've been contributing to goodness of humans for a long time. But did you know that about the Magna Carta?
I'd heard that it was from oak gall, but maybe it's just maybe there are different parts of the Magna Carta written in different inks.
Yes. But let's see. And again, you know, you say fungi are metabolic wizards and can explore, scavenge, and salvage ingeniously. Their abilities rivaled only by bacteria. Using cocktails of potent enzymes and acids, fungi can break down some of the most stubborn substances on the planet. So, I mean, do you think of it? Do you think you forged a relationship in which it is an ally, and you are a voice, in a sense, on its behalf about, you know, so much to inquire and about how we form collaborative alliances and expand our narrow human thinking about the wonder and amazingness of intelligence and cooperation all around us?
Yeah, well, I certainly feel that these organisms have changed and continue to change the way that I think and feel and imagine. And in that sense, I can feel the way that they have somehow coaxed me into a new way of behaving, a new way of acquiring attitudes, a new way of inquiry into the world around me. So that's very visceral feeling. To what extent there's an active deal, I'm not sure, but I certainly feel like that this book and these fungal interests have somehow found me, and I'm playing my part. So it's hard to know, but it's certainly a time for us to think more about the organisms that we've neglected for too long, because what we're blind to, we are consigned to exploit, abuse, destroy. So it's time we alleviated our fungus blindness, and if this can play any part in that project, then I'll be happy.
Right, excuse me, all too briefly, I'm going to release you to do responsible fundraising. But before you go, just a few things, because this is our part one. We're hosting Merlin back for this fantastic book on June 4th for a full unfurling hour. This is a little taste. But that idea of, you know, forming partnerships and alliances, and our buddy Stamets is fond of saying that now Johns Hopkins' science is proving folklore, that the psilocybe mushrooms increase cooperation in the regions of the brain, calm down the amygdala, and encourage the cultivation of curiosity, confidence, and kindness, which he says those are leadership qualities. And it seems that at the, you know, heart of your offering in great detail that we will explore further on June 4th, it's really exciting. But it is, you know, how do we form partnerships? And I was remembering the first time I hosted Paul Stamets on the radio millions of years ago, you know, and I said, what about radioactivity? Can the mushrooms metabolize that? And he said, no, nothing in nature can metabolize radioactivity, but the little guys are working on it, right? So I like this animistic to and fro, wedded to science. Science and mysticism used to be very happy together. And the little guys are working on it. And it, just to toss back to you this idea of now so essential for humans to form informed, reverent, knowledgeable, collaborative partnerships with what we love, with different qualities of intelligence in nature. And is that fair enough to say that's a primary dedication of yours?
Absolutely, yeah. And to inquire into the relationships that we have already formed, but that we've forgotten to form. So to form new relationships, to remember the relationships that sustain us and that we depend on, and that we've forgotten. And a mixture of the two.
Right. Well, you know, we might say, you know, just in a broad sweep. I mean, the restoration of intimacy to the world and respect, and the word respect means to look again, is essential, and intimate cahooting and the the necessary thing out of this cauldron, you know, the biomimicry movements, the rather than looting nature, you know, humbly cooperate and borrow nature's guiding recipes is part of that. But if you want to spiral forth a wish or a blessing of any kind or a science statement, anything you want to do before I reluctantly release you until our full hour, June 4th. But is there anything that you'd like to put forward or the mushroom speaking through you, the fungi?
Just that I'm always trying to lead my questioning and thinking about the more than human world into places where new questions open up, and in those spaces where new questions open up, to not be scared by this space created by an open question, not to let the agoraphobia set in when faced with this wide open question, to avoid building small rooms from quick answers, and to be present in the uncertainty and the ambiguity and the terror of a big open question. And fungi really put me into that place and challenged me to find some comfort in that ambiguity and that uncertainty. And I feel like we're in that kind of time right now, and I just hope that we all learn to avoid building these small rooms from quick answers, and to learn to, if we can, enjoy those wide open spaces.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That's great. And so I look forward to our next longer cahoot, and, well, really in perpetuity. We are both Librans studying relationship in different forms with the moon in Virgo, micro. And I love your deep delving, richly cultivated profferings. And this is a wonderful, wonderful book. So I reluctantly release you, Merlin Sheldrake, until let us cahoot backstage and then also on stage in preparation for our June 4th full hour. So thank you. Woof, woof, woof.
No, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Absolutely. So that is our little short our short intro to fabulous, wonderful colleague. Crucial, again, for what are we ladling out of this cauldron of death and rebirth, and again, collaboration, informed, reverent curiosity. And here in the studio, in Berkeley Studios, is wonderful Chris Welsh. Are you there, darling?
Yes, I am.
Oh, very good, very good. Yes, I was. Yeah, it's like to dense down a vast and fabulous work. It's like some wag was saying, you asked me to write you a short piece, but I didn't have time, so I wrote you a long one.
Yeah.
But so here we are, and
that's my speed for sure.
And so, yeah, wonderful Chris Welsh, and let me see if I can, you know, the fantastic things that you have guided me to,
I have it up in front of me, so I can see.
That's good.
What we're talking about is a new fangled thing whereby we can see if we're raising any money, basically. That's the idea.
Oh, and are we? I can't tell.
Let's see. We are hour 14, right?
Oh, really?
It's 2 p.m. Well, I mean, we have $1,690 on.
Where do you see that? Never mind. This is backstage conversation.
Yes. Well, I like seeing it. I don't know if it's right. And of course, my eyesight is no better than my hearing. But.
That's great. Well, I can see, like, okay, but anyway, but we will be dedicated no matter what. Oh, yes. Oh, illustrious, fantastic, dynamic listeners, for some of you for 23 years and some of you for the last 20 minutes. But it is so crucial. We love our mothership, Pacifica, Goddess of Peace, KPFA, only non-corporate sponsored, listener sponsored entirely radio network left in America. And so we are cahooting. And Chris, you longtime also fellow colleague on Pacifica.
Oh yes, very long time.
Very long time. We are the ancient but still very kick butt, of course. So
the elders.
No, I hate that word.
Okay, good.
Mavens, or something spicier, orca matriarchs. I don't know, but we are proclaiming. I do like the experiment that KPFA is engaging in. Experiment of symbiotic support. That rather than give stuff, right, which is fun, you know, books and things. But we are, rather than a premium, we are enticing in a positive way that 10% of what you donate to KPFA will go to a number of nonprofits. You can see online at kpfa.org. There's food banks and things. But we were invited by management to pick one. And I go, well, can't I pick three? Because there's UndocuFund San Francisco, UndocuFund Sonoma County, UndocuFund Oakland. And we have fantastic listening, dynamic people in all of those realms. So when you call 1-800-439-5732, you can specify where you would like your 10% of some fantastic, generous, within your own realm donation go to UndocuFund San Francisco, UndocuFund Oakland, or UndocuFund Sonoma. Including the voices that have been missing, including those who have become invisible, including, you know, again, embracing all. So this, I love this. It was founded in UndocuFund San Francisco, founded in March 2020 in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Hmm. UndocuFund Sonoma County was started in 2017 through the fires and now through the pandemics, you know, but I think it's a wonderful idea. So as generously as you can to keep this information, again, discerning, nuanced information, voices going out into the world, because we're in this story storm of delusional crack pottery, as well as real true things. And we want to sift and have standards and research, but also absolutely include the missing voices. So for any generous, within your own definition of generous, a donation that you would like to make online, kpfa.org, or by calling 1-800-439-5732. We do have a goal for the hour. You're looking at the thing. You're looking at
Well,
the thing.
I'm looking at what has been pledged. I have no idea. I think you determined the goal. That's what I did anyway.
Right. Well, we say, you know, $8 million. That's our
there
goal.
There you go. Perfect.
No. Surprise us. No, it's a humble goal of 2,000. There we go. That would be 20 callers at 100, or 10 callers at a whatever, or five, whatever, or one caller at 2,000, however you want to do it. but that's just it's an incentive, you know, but we're happy to go more just for the fun of it. And I like magic numbers. I do. And everything physical that we do, that we imbue with dedicated symbolism, is a kind of participatory magic. You know, by the calling of this number, 1-800-439-5732, you know, may it be that sanity inform the world and dispel delusions everywhere in your heart, you know, or by going on securekpfa.org and pledging some witty, generous by your definition, witty by your definition, going, and here's $280.02. You know, whatever meaningful witticism, playing with that which was serious, playing with money. You know, Venus is stationing now in the sky. It's a very active thing. Venus is love, art, beauty. And curiously, Money, right? How do we heal our relationship to money? And it's Venus is the principle of intimacy. And it's like, well, we want to be intimate with money. Money's had a hard time being kidnapped by nefarious people.
Hmm.
You know, again, you know, come and dedicate it to something meaningful, especially Venus in Gemini, which is voices, information, guiding information, who brought what. And Venus is beginning her descent into the underworld to reclaim the power of voice. And this sets the whole new Venus cycle, very much dancing with KPFA and Pacifica, which is she will get lower in the western sky until she's on her departure tour now, until she, early June, disappears for a moment. Usually she disappears for 40 days of invisibility, called 40 Days in the Underworld, dear to Merlin Sheldrake's heart, and then emerges as the morning star. But she can't leave those humans alone for that long. She just goes down for 3 days this time. But she comes back, you know, and this is Venus, goddess of peace, Pacifica. She comes back with a microphone.
Uh-huh.
She comes back with broadcasting. She comes back with a radio studio. She comes back with our telepathic little coyote ears, you know, going, no, 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 that are very skillful at discerning traps and springing them. So when Venus does that, all pre-industrial cultures would have known this and go, oh, it is time for that which is intimate with life to regain its voice and its influence. And we go, yeah, let's spiral it out there.
That's one of the things that's so precious and such a gift from Caroline, is that you get this context of the universe and of planets, just like everything, constantly in motion, and of how that means something. There's a communication and there's a purpose, and there's a consequence, I say to my grandfather, my grandson. And the consequences change as the movements change, and it's very comforting, actually, and to know that this moment may be what it is, but it will change, and it can change in many different ways. And the gift that Caroline is and comes every Thursday to you, think about that and see what gift you might like to then, in appropriateness, give to the station that brings her to you on the airwaves. And the phone number here, as she's been saying, is 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-KPFA, and of course online at KPFA.org, KPFA.org, all over the planet. And I'm so glad that you said that about the 10%, because we're getting these sheets, we're separate from each other, so we don't have the jefes that we can go and talk to, Brooke and Laura and Crystal. I have to email them, and for some reason that's less intimate than going to go see them. And I had not yet figured out what it was, how we were joining or cahooting, as you would say, with other nonprofits, and you just spelled it out. So now I get it. So if you donate, for example, I'm going to pick a magic number, $94.1, $94.10, and then
$9,410. Okay.
There, yeah, oh my good. Goodness, that would be perfect. 10% of that will go to the nonprofit of your choice, and the one that Caroline has chosen is
in San Francisco, Sonoma, and Oakland. I love that. But there's also, you know, Alameda County Food Bank, Central California Food Bank, San Francisco Marin Food Bank.
We have a whole long list on the website.
Yeah,
for sure.
There's a whole long thing. We were requested to pick one. I was like, I'm picking three. Well, okay. And I like it. You know, again, I'm so happy to to have Merlin Sheldrake return for a full hour on June 4th. But everything real, everything symbolic. He speaks about fungi as a living team by which much of life is stitched into relationship.
Mm.
Right. Okay. Well, let's think of useful, you know, information. Let's think of KPFA Pacifica Vision and Activist Show as aspiring to be like fungi, living team by which much of life is stitched into relationship. And part of the magic of radio is it is invisible. You know, and as Merlin guides, you know, can Pluto in the underworld, most of life is invisible.
Mm.
You know, it's that backstage dynamic. But also, I've been fond of, another radio guest, Rachel Harris, from, I use this quote almost every day here, Neuroscience Report, relationship to an unseen ally is the same in the brain as talking to a good friend. And I love that, because to our brain, visible and invisible is equally real. And that kind of extends to radio. I mean, we're talking to good friends, we're invisible, you know, and it's the same as talking to a good friend, according to neuroscience, and we'll go with that. So, voices of connectivity and embrace. Part of why I love the Oakland and Sonoma and San Francisco UndocuFund, to which contributors, team out there, when you make a donation to KPFA Pacifica by calling 1-800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org, you know, we are extending the mycelial network of support. You know, all the cruelty and churlishness of the dementor toddlers, the demonically possessed toddlers, you know, to whom we've outsourced leadership, you know, they run on cruelty and churlishness. Mm-hmm. And so as a response, we do want to, like the fungi, like the mycelia, weave these systems of support and embrace, going, no, we don't want anybody to go down without solace and care and nutrient. And may it be that our, you know, as UndocuFund is providing tangible support, health, shelter, food, money for undocumented workers and immigrants, may this station also, you know, provide in the form of information, food. And part of what I love about the Vision Activist Show, 23 years, is that it operates when it's on the air and when it's not on the air. People connect. We weave them together. People go, who was that guest? And, I got in touch with that guest, and we're starting this project thing. And where's this? There are many ways, you know, when the old structures of support collapse, you know, the energy that was invested in them is available for rededication. So without being...
Because
like,
energy never dies. Right. That's right. Energy doesn't
die. There
you
go. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Available. Helped me through something, because I loved listening to the British accent. I always like listening to that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought when he, near the end, when he was talking about how becoming comfortable with uncertainty, I was like, I'm not there yet. But just what you've just said, there is nothing but uncertainty. Hello. That's really life as we know it. And now the uncertainties are very scary. And the notion, however, as you've just been saying, that there is this unifying, connecting, team-building opportunity thing exists already, and it's even physical. It's this radio station. It's very comforting to know that even though I don't know what's going to happen next and you don't know what's going to happen next, at least we'll know whatever we know and not know what we don't know together. And I would hate to be reliant on my own brain and emotional functioning to get through whatever we're going to have to go through. And it's a great blessing to have KPFA listeners and the guests and my colleagues who are on the air here. It's such a relief. If you think of folks that don't have it, that don't know to go to kpfa.org and are alone in the wilderness, do yourself a favor, and everybody who listens now and who could be listening in the future, by supporting this station, this network, this this spirit, this thing here. 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-KPFA, and online, of course, at kpfa.org. That's really one of the best ways to do it. It saves us the most money. It's all ours, kpfa.org. Because we're paying, no doubt, a nominal amount to tell us something that answers the phones for us, because of course we can't have people physically in the phone room. We're just as real as if we were in the phone room. So there, 1-800-439-5732. Ah, man. Huh.
Right. So yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we're weaving. So I think, you know, we're liberating ourselves. So there is uncertainty. We say certainty is a booby prize and has been for a long time in the modern world. Well, the modern world has been addicted to certainty, not working anymore. That's gone. And so it does these other qualities for us going right. Not knowing, a humble acknowledgement of we don't know, makes us available to mystery. We say that wonder invites revelation. I wonder what that we're in this call and response, you know. Mm. And so, you know, we're really encouraging people to donate to imagination and wonder in happy cahoots with deep delving, investigative information of a scientific and political sort. And again, many messages. And part of the ongoing love of, you know, many people, the homeopathy show with Dana Ullman, many things to break out of the monolithic tyranny of polarity in public discourse, even about how we approach this time. You know, oh, it's vaccines, oh, it's, you know, the whatever, it's whatever. Still battle metaphor, as opposed to so many people going, strengthening our immune system, strengthening our intimacy, strengthening our networks of supportive solace as well. These are all information, you know, again, narration contributors that we are dedicating to. That's it. Well, that's what we're pledging to those things. And and also, you know, as we will explore with Merlin Sheldrake on June 4th, and that's part of my enthusiasm for let's make this fun drive fun. It's like, okay, it's three short, you know, fun drive shows, three enticing guests who will be back for a full hour. All right, that feels fun. And Merlin says, you know, for our microbiomes, you know, we are composed of bacteria and fungi and viruses. Our body is a planet. You know, we are not one thing. The notion of the individual tends to dissolve, and we go so pledge and vote for that. You know, again, securely online, kpfa.org.
We have mere seconds, so the phone number and the website are the best things to mention.
All right.
Which I will. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-HEY-KPFA, if you like it better on letters. I prefer numbers on the phone dial, I must say. 439-5732. And the website, kpfa.org. That's all from me.
That's great. No, but you can understand this thing. My online thing that I'm supposed to track how generous people are, it's saying nothing. I mean, I don't know. Is it nothing?
Oh, well, it's only technology. You know, what do they know?
Okay, but well, anyway. We're almost out. Okay, so one last exhortation. The technology apparently doesn't work, but the radio does. Radio receiving. We are weaving a web of information support, you know, as we are dedicated to kpfa.org or 1-800-439-5732. Generous donation, 10% will go to a wonderful nonprofit of your choice. On DocuFund, San Francisco, Sonoma, or Oakland is what I think is, well, they're all wonderful. Anyway, there we go. All right,
love you, Caroline.
Music. Thank you.
Next
love
week.
You, Chris. Okay, more next week. Thank you so much again, Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey, and Merlin Sheldrake will be back for a full hour on June 4th, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team.